About modeling QPOs in Magnetar Giant Flares, this is hiding a bit the topic of this talk, because in reality I'm going to talk about elasticity. So this is going to be somehow related to the talks of after the coffee break. So this is a work done in collaboration with people at the MPA, with Nick Esteguras and Tony Font, and especially the simulations that I'm going to show and the methods have been developed by Michael Gabler at the MPA. So this is the outline. I'm going to motivate a bit why we want to do this kind of magnetoelastic oscillations and then explain what are the current models for the QPOs and the simulations and our results. So first, what are these SGRs? The observations, observationally, are objects which have recurrent gamma ray flare activities. So you see flashes recurrently along the years for the same objects. They are nearby and associated to supernova remnants. So one thinks that these are neutron stars. They are slowly rotating with very slow periods and rapid spin down, so we think they have high magnetic fields. So the model is that they are magnetars. So this is the standard model, Duncan and Thompson model for these kind of objects, with magnetic fields about 10 to the 14 Gauss. So the explanation for this flare activity is that during the evolution, the long-term evolution of the interior magnetic field, there are stresses producing in the crust, and at some point the crust is breaking at some point when it reaches the breaking strain, and it releases an amount of energy to the magnetosphere, which produces a fireball which thermally radiates, and basically this is what you see. You observe first a very short peak of soft gamma rays, and then the cooling of this thing in the X-rays. So among these flares, which are quite frequent, there has been three events which are called giant flares, which are especially luminous. So this is the X-ray tail of one of these events, the one of 2004. The gamma ray flash is hidden here, so you only see the tail, the X-ray tail, which is related to the cooling of this fireball. And the first thing you see is that it's a periodicity, which is several seconds, and is related to the rotation period of the magnetar. And if you look more carefully at each of these oscillation periods, and you make the analysis carefully here inside, there are observations of quasi-periodic oscillations of here inside. Here. Yeah. Right. So in the first observation of these QPOs, these quasi-periodic oscillations, were in this object in 2004 by Israel, and then that was confirmed by other authors. And they went back to other observations of giant flares, and they found the same. In this one, this is rather old, so the data has not so much quality, but they claim that they still find some frequencies. And there has been additional observations. I have to say, all these QPOs are observed for tens to hundreds of seconds. They last very long. There are recent observations of more modes which last, has been found only within one period. So we don't know if they are very short or, because sometimes it's difficult to connect, then make the analysis of the frequencies from period to period, because you have something which is oscillating and then you have the small wiggles. And meanwhile, there has been also observation of this kind of QPOs in normal flares, which is very promising, because it means that if people start seeing QPOs in normal flares, which are very frequent, we could have a large amount of data to analyze. So the basic properties of these QPOs are first, there are two frequency bands, basically, one with low frequency, say from 17 to 155. I mean, this is the range of the, all these ones. And then one of high frequency, only observed for this SDR, from 600 to almost 200 hertz. The second thing is that there is a rotational phase dependence of this, or at least of some of these frequencies. So use that means or that indicates that the origins of these frequencies is probably close to the star. And then there is a completely unexplained variability of the frequencies and the amplitude. So some of these frequencies are appearing, last for 10 seconds, disappear, appear again, change a bit in frequency. So this is probably the most difficult part of this business. So the models. So the first model that came out to explain this kind of oscillations, and it's very nice, is just, well, these are zero oscillations of the crust. So, and when you do the math, you have n equals zero modes, which depends on where n is the number of radial modes and l is the angular structure. So the n equals zero modes depend heavily on l, and are basically, you can think that these are shear waves traveling along the crust. So it contains information of the size of the length of the crust, so of the radius of the star, basically. For n larger than 1, you go to higher frequencies, and it's basically related to the thick of the crust. So from these frequencies, you get information about the thick of the crust. So if you were able to identify the observed frequencies with these modes, then in principle, it could be possible to make very strong restrictions about the thick of the crust and the radius of the star, or a combination of both. You can see here the kind of analysis of restrictions that you could do if you were able to identify the frequencies. And it naturally explains the two bands of QPOs with low and high frequencies, because the predictions for the six modulus naturally explain something about several tens of hertz for n equals 0 and 600 to 800 for n equal 1 and above, and modes above. So it very naturally explain that. The problem is that when you do the numbers, you have here a very fixed relation for L, which predicts very clearly, which is the separation between modes. And this doesn't fit the observations at all. So there is no way you can match all these frequencies. I mean, you can start playing with the lower frequencies, and then you cannot match the upper one. And there are frequencies which are previous, which are too close to be explained by this relation. So there is really a something which is not well understood with this model. So the second thing is that, well, this is a magnetar, so we have a very strong magnetic field, about 10 to the 14 Gauss. So magnetic field has an influence of that. So just forget for a moment about the crust and just think about what is going on with the magnetic field. So we have, imagine you have this kind of magnetic field structure inside the star, and now if you perturb one of these magnetic field lines, you will have an arc bend wave traveling along the star, forth and back. So different magnetic field lines have different arc bend speeds, have different lengths. So for each magnetic field line, you can think of oscillations with different frequencies. So when you look at all the frequencies, you have a continuum. So here, this is a work that we did a student discontinue. This parameter parameterized different magnetic field lines. And here you see the frequencies for the different continua. You have different for continua for depending on the number of nodes you have here. And also in the closed magnetic field lines, you have other kind of structures. So the prediction is that if you have a continuum and you excite it, this continuum, the oscillations are going to accumulate in the stream of the continuum, where the phase mixing effects are smaller, and this is indeed what we show. And even if it is a continuum, you can get some kind of you get some quibios which could explain the observations. Now, when you put both things together, you have the crash, you have the continuum, so there has been arguments saying that the oscillations of the crash are going to be absorbed by the continuum completely. So what we wanted to do is to make the simulations to see if that was true and what are the consequences. So now, we are doing magnetoelastic simulations in general relativity. So we start with the energy momentum tensor for a fluid plus magnetic field, and now we add new terms due to elasticity, which is depending on the shear modulus. So we are going to do a number of simplifications. We are only going to consider torsional oscillations of the star, so it's much simpler. We are going to consider that they are linear oscillations, so we are going to use a nonlinear code, but we are going to drop terms which are, in a consistent way with the linear approximation, and we are going to use small perturbations, extremely small perturbations, so we are running the code in the linear regime. So it's basically the same as if we were running a linear code. We are going to fix space-time because this is just torsional oscillations and we don't expect large variations of the space-time. And spherically symmetric background is a good approximation because these are non-rotating stars. We are using ideal MSD and axis symmetry as well. So what's next? So now, under this approximation, so we linearize it, we make it axis symmetric, we make it torsional oscillations, we simplify a lot the system. This is the shear tensor that we get, and we have an evolution where here this is the displacement in the phi direction. So you are making stresses in the crust, and you follow the displacement of locations in the crust. So we have evolution equations for this displacement. It's trivially related to the velocity. And it's convenient to not to evolve these equations, but directly the equations for the radial and theta derivative, because this is what enters in the shear tensor. So it's more convenient numerically to do that, rather than evolving this equation and then making the derivatives. Now, when we put that together with the hydro equations or the ideal MSD equations, we get into a system in a conservation form for the momentum in the phi direction, the magnetic field in the phi direction, because we are only considering torsional oscillation. The density is fixed, the poloidal magnetic field is fixed, it's a background which is not going to change in the linear regime. And then for the radial and theta derivative of the displacement, here, you have the fluxes and the sources as usual in the conservation form. And then we can compute the eigenvalues of this system. And what we get is that basically the eigenvalues are related to B squared plus shear modulus over density, roughly speaking. So this eigenvalue in the limit of very large magnetic field just gives you Alban waves. In the limit of very small magnetic field, it gives you shear waves, and in between you get mixed modes. So this is very important, this point. You don't have two kinds of waves. You only have one kind of wave. So you cannot think of a problem of a coupling of shear oscillations with Alban oscillations, because you only have one magnetoelastic mode. And one has to be very careful when trying to put the two previous analyses together without considering that. So the boundary conditions that we are using at the surface, because we are not evolving the magnetosphere, is we assume it continuous traction, which is just continuity momentum. But the boundary condition in reality is this one, is that the B phi component is continuous across the surface, which means that we don't have any currents at the surface. So this is, and therefore we have a B phi component in the magnetosphere, meaning that if you move the magnetic field in the interior, the magnetosphere is going to be moved with the with that magnetic field line. So, and this is somehow what we want. We want to explain observations, and we want to see how the interior, how the magnetosphere is reacting to the interior. And that's why we're using this kind of boundary conditions. And this implies that we have to impose that the radial derivative of the displacement has to be zero. So the crash court interface, in principle, we don't. Sorry, I forgot to mention. We are using
conditions is just no currencies. So I said in the core crash interface we are not allowed to impose a boundary condition. So, but we have to be careful that we have conservation of momentum across this surface, and this is a delicate issue, even if we are using Riemann solvers, because you have to fulfill this condition at the core crust interface. So whenever you have a shear modulus, a jump in the shear modulus, you are going to have a jump in the derivative in the radial derivative of the displacement going from the crust to the core. And here, the displacement in the core is just some kind of tracer that we define using the velocity. So, I mean, you don't really need it. It's just to have an idea of what is going on in the core. So what we are doing is use basically we are implementing this condition in the reconstruction scheme that we are using in the Riemann solver, such that we put the core crash interface at the interface, at the cell interface, and we make the reconstruction such that this condition is fulfilled exactly at the core crash interface. So in this way, if you don't do that and you just use the Riemann solver, typically when you have here a large jump, you typically get a spike in the core crash interface. And this spike typically grows and eventually the code crashes. So this is an important point. And the fact that you have this condition here, it produces a discontinuous B-phi at the core crash interface, which means that you have some kind of current shift there. And this is just a consequence of the fact that we are using ideal MST. So this is somehow a caveat of this approach, which is based in ideal MST. So now I'm going to the results. So first, I'm going to show just the absorption. As I say, you have the crust, you have the continuum, how the crustal, if you have an oscillation in the crust, how it is absorbed by the continuum. So can we believe the oscillations of the crust? So here what we are doing is adding a perturbation for one single mode. So we know the mode structure, so we can excite this mode, only this mode in the crust. And then we are increasing the magnetic field. And this is basically is what is called the overlap integral. So this is an integral which gives you the amplitude of this mode, basically. So for zero magnetic field, you see very little damping of this mode, meaning that this damping is purely numerical. So in the case without magnetic field, you should not see any damping. So that gives you a measure of the error of the code. And then as you increase the magnetic field, you can see that it is strongly damps or the Alvin continuum is strongly absorbing the crust oscillations. And if you look at the magnetic fields, this is 2 times 10 to the 14 Gauss. So for 2 times 10 to the 14, you are damping, you are absorbing the crust oscillations in 200 milliseconds. So even if you go to 2 times 10 to the 13, look, I mean, the time scales is just half a second. And if the crustal modes have to survive for tens to hundreds of seconds to be observed as QPOs. And this is completely incompatible with observation. Yes. Into the core. This is completely going into the core. We check that. I will show you later what is the resulting excitation of the core because of that. So we have done this the same I mean, this is just an example, but we have done that for several modes, perturbations. We have used two different equations of state and two prescriptions for the same modulus, giving a range in I mean, one is relatively stiff, the other is relatively soft, and the shear modulus, they have 50% differences. We have changed mass from 1.2 to 2.2 solar masses, and these results is basically consistent in all cases. You always have this thing. So now, what is this typical damping time? So here I'm plotting the damping time, so the time it takes to be absorbed by the core, over the Alvin crossing time of the star, and here is the magnetic field. So what you are seeing basically is for different perturbations with different L's, always for n equals zero modes, and you see that the absorption is happening in a time scale between 2 and 5% of the Alvin crossing time. So it's very robustly related to the Alvin crossing time of the star. So this is going to be really, really fast comparable to the observation. So if this is the case, forget about n equal zero crustal modes as explanation for QPOs. However, this is, just to remember here, this is for a magnetic field going through the core. You will have the possibility of a magnetic field confined in the crust, which is something we want to study in future. So now, what happens with the n equal 1? So as I said, the n equal 1 are basically magnetic shear waves confined in the radial direction, so they behave somehow differently. I mean, if you have shear waves, the n equals 0 are shear waves which are traveling in this direction. So here at the pole, the magnetic field is crossing the core crust interface. So each time an equal zero mode reaches this point, some energy goes into the core. In this case, it doesn't happen the same. I mean, you can have waves standing here, and since here the magnetic field is almost tangent to the core crust interface, it's very difficult to throw energy into the core. So you can have crustal modes which are deformed now. You can see that they are squeezed toward the equator because here you can very effectively dump energy into the core, and they can survive much longer. So what we have done is for simulations with 5 times 10 to the 14 Gauss, we get about damping times about 10 times larger than in the case of n equals 0. So the problem is that this is not a final result. So in the previous case, everything was well resolved. We made the resolution studies, and everything was very, very consistent. Here we have the problem that the scales are basically 20 times smaller than in the n equals 0. So we need much more resolution to resolve all these things. In particular, each time this oscillation sends an Alvin wave to the interior, the wavelength, I mean, is so small that you basically have some wave here, Alvin wave here with about 300 nodes. And you need to resolve that to be able to make this to compute the damping times properly. And also, you want to compute several Alvin crossing times of the star to see the back reaction of the Alvin wave coming back to the crust, which is something we can do in the n equals zero, but not here. So we are here. We are very restricted by numerical issues, and maybe the damping time in reality are much larger than these values. But I mean, this is something that I just drop here that. We don't know, but I mean, there's still an open possibility that n equal 1 modes and higher, I mean, modes with n larger than 1 can survive for these several hundred seconds. So maybe these modes can still explain the high frequency QPOs which are observed. So now, what happens with the lower, what happens with the Alvin oscillations, and what happens with the lower QPOs. So now this plot is just my last plot. So here, what we are doing is just we put a perturbation in star, we let it evolve for about 10 Alvin crossing times, and then we make Fourier transform at each point of the star, and we look at the places where you have highest amplitude, so some kind of modes. So here, these are basically the structure of these kind of modes, which are just the quipios, basically are the oscillations at the turning points of the continuum, of these Alvin quipios. So what you see is that for this is low magnetic field, 10 to the 14, this is very high magnetic field, 8 times 10 to the 15. So for low magnetic field, we say that the crustal oscillations are completely damped into the core. And what happens is that you get this oscillation which are confined in the core. Here, what the car cross interface effectively is a reflecting boundary and doesn't allow anything to go into the crust. So as you increase the magnetic field, this boundary becomes transparent and Alvin quipios can reach the surface. So this has observational consequences because this kind of modes you are not going to be able to observe because they are not connected to the magnetosphere, so they cannot modulate the X-ray signal. While these ones, maybe there is a chance that at least they are connected to the magnetosphere, so there is a chance that they can explain observation. And you can see that there is a threshold about, I would say 10 to the 15, in which the Alvin quipios reach the surface. There is another feature here, is that the old core crust interface doesn't become transparent at once. It depends on the angle of the magnetic field line. And this is because you get this feature that these quipios go towards the equator and then go back to the pole and this kind of things. So I don't know, maybe there is a chance that we can explain the lower quipios as Alvin oscillations of this kind, but for that we need magnetic fields above roughly 10 to the 15, but it depends on the shear field. So just going to the conclusions, you can just forget about n equals 0 modes if the magnetic field is going into interior. If it's going into the if it is confined in the crust, we have to do the simulations to see what happened. For the n equal 1 modes, we still have some maybe they are explaining the observations. And as you saw, I'm not making any prediction about the frequencies of the Alvin quipios, because there are too many uncertainties to make any prediction. So it depends on magnetic field structure, if it is confined in the crust of the core, if there is a toroidal component in the equation of state, in the shear modulus, if there is a pasta phase, if the core is superfluid or superconductor. And now you have to explain, of course, the modulation of the X-ray emission, and that can change everything. Thank you.
So it seems that everything, like all the quantitative results that you've shown so far, depend highly on magnetic field configuration. In particular, that showing that, like, you know, the n equal to 0 modes disappear very quickly, whereas the n equal to 1 modes last longer. If you had higher order multiples in the B field, you're going to kill those higher order crustal modes just as fast as you would the longer. It seems like have sort of larger order in the B field that's going to kill larger order modes, and small order is going to kill smaller order modes because it'll be absorbed more easily. Like, the only reason those n equal to 1 modes that you found didn't die was because the B field was lower in that region where they were allowed to live.
If you start with a strong poloidal field, even if you put multiples, the multiples have to be very strong to to really give you something very different at the surface. Otherwise, you just have a distortion of the dipole. We try that, and unless you put really very large multipoles, you don't get that. But, I mean, it's true that, but on the other hand, you might always expect places in the star where the magnetic field at the Korkas interface is more tangent. Maybe this is not the equator. Maybe it's another place. But still there, you have a chance that n equal modes can survive.
And also, wouldn't, these are all toroidal modes. Wouldn't a toroidal field also channel the energy sort of not necessarily towards the core, but also provide a way for them to oscillate, the magnetic energy to oscillate with the crustal modes?
Sorry?
So the crustal modes are generally toroidal modes, right? They're
well, these ones are the ones, I mean, people have concentrated in torsional modes because the polar modes are, I think they are most, first are harder to excite.
Yeah,
and then they couple, for example, with sound waves, and you can have dissipation at the surface. So probably all these modes are damped more
quickly. Right, of course. I'm saying that these are so the ones that people care about for QPOs are toroidal modes.
Yeah.
And if you had a toroidal field, like, that channels energy. That would channel the magnetic energy around the star, not into the star. So if you include a toroidal field, that can certainly change how the energy is channeled away from the oscillation.
I mean, there's something we want to do. I mean, there has been simulations without crust, but with toroidal field, and they only get some differences in the frequency, but because the important part is the poloidal part. I mean, it's important the toroidal part because it's coupling. If you have a toroidal field, then you have a linear coupling with polar oscillations, yes. And then you can dissipate more energy. But on the other hand, you can only have a toroidal field in the region of closed magnetic field lines, and you don't care about this region because this is a region confined inside the star, which is not going to produce any signal outside. So, but once you put the crust, I mean, it's something we want to do.
I guess I'm just worried that, we can't really say anything quantitative, and even what you said that is quantitative, it depends highly on your field configuration. And I don't know if you can really write off all these different.
That's why we want to do more field configurations to try to see more general constraints rather than this one, which is model, I mean, it's model dependent. Yes.
I had a question about interface between the crust and the core. Mm-hmm. If because of pasta, the shear modulus drops slowly and continuously from a non-zero value in the crust gradually to zero at the core, would that change your results?
No, it wouldn't because, I mean, we at the beginning, when we were having these problems of the spike, what we try first is to smooth it, and we were getting the same result. So it's not changing that very significantly.
Any other questions? All right, let's thank Pablo again, and we'll have our